Welcome to The Marketing Commute, a podcast that explores the roads taken and the lessons learned by truly world-class Australian marketers. I'm Mike Boyd, and joining me on The Commute this time are Andrew Baxter, Board Director, Senior Advisor and Marketing Columnist at The Australian, as well as Carmen Becker, Partner at KPMG Australia and Leader of their CMO Advisory Practice. In this episode of Season 3 of The Marketing Commute, we're very lucky to be joined in the studio by Kate Whitney, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer for Marley Spoon. Kate has had a diverse career which started in Sydney and took her to New York not so long ago before coming back home at the beginning of this year. We'll be chatting to Kate a little bit later on in the show. Okay, team, what's caught our eye this week?
Well, for me, I think, you know, the supermarkets have been terrific through the pandemic in many, many ways, but there seems to be a bit of a renewed push around sustainability. Woolies has been talking about, halving plastic waste by 2025. I know Coles are looking at some similar initiatives, and I think that's great. You know, it's a good moment in time. We've got a new generation of, younger people, Gen Z and millennials, who are very sustainably focused, environmentally focused. So I think these are really, good shifts from these guys. What about you?
Christmas has come, and it's come early, and we know from just around my home area, the decorations are up and out, Christmas lights are on, and it's only still mid-November. In the UK, Pizza Hut has done something which is really exciting. They've launched a Christmas pizza, and they've launched it early, and they've launched it because they've said it's the best thing to come out of 2020. And Christmas pizza has in it things like bacon, stuffing, and chicken, which sounds, I don't know, gross, nice, I'm not sure, but I think it's going to be a hit.
It feels like a flat turducken. And look, speaking of things that are, finally coming good in 2020, it's interesting to see that the Channel 9, or the Nine Group, as it's called today, says that TV ad revenue is starting to sort of come back, lifting sort of 15%. So, I mean, I think a lot of the media, TV for one, out of home's another, and radio as well, I'm really seeing a good resurgence as we sort of near the end of 2020 and they're starting to see the market sort of pick up, which has been a very positive, I think, for the entire market.
I think so. And I think the outdoor industry is starting to do well too.
Yeah, we've seen trying to get into Q4 at the moment in TV is very challenging. Mm-hmm. It's a very hot market. Prices are up. CPMs on Facebook are up. Everything is in the media's hand right now because of this surge of demand has come back in. We're waiting to see whether or not it sustains after Christmas.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because traditionally it would sort of get to December and then kind of fall away, and everyone then jumps on to sort of the bargain hunters. Yes. So you're right, it will be interesting to see how far it can sustain.
Will it sustain? Because I think the networks need it too. So you can see they're really, the upfronts this year were amazing. I think we're really wanting to see whether or not they can build a programming platform next year that'll keep the advertisers in there.
We're also seeing a lot of marketing budgets getting cut. So at the same time as demand, so some are demanding and some are cutting. So it's a very interesting market out there for marketing directors.
The ad agency groups will have their work cut out.
Yeah, although again, their results are starting to come back. They're certainly not down as far as they were in the second quarter. The third quarter have been a little bit better. The last thing I wanted to quickly chat about was Menu Log's been doing, I think, a terrific job globally in here. Yeah. And we saw during State of Origin, Snoop Dogg a second time round, an Aussie campaign. Mm. So I think there's a lot of fun going on. I mean, I was talking to my son in the car on the way to dropping at school this morning, and even he and his mates, I asked him about Snoop Dogg, and he said, in his mind, and he's 16, it's so amazing that they're so media savvy, but he said he crosses generations, Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
He said, all of us know him, and he said all of them, because of the memes and all the fun stuff he does, he's very cool to them too.
Yeah. My kids sing those commercials. So back in the day when we had the jingles, they're singing the Snoop Dogg Menu Logs.
Well, our brand in the US is actually called Marley Spoon and Martha Stewart. So it's co-licensed with Martha Stewart. And we have the cred of the millennials over there purely because of her association with Snoop Dogg.
Ah,
so we've gotten ourselves out of the Nantucket Martha's Vineyard set, and we're actually now acquiring, the California New Yorkers because of her association purely on that Snoop Dogg friendship, which is really cool. So we actually get both ends of the market.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think the other thing I like about what's going on here is that the Menu Log campaign, I think, originally started overseas, and then the Australian guys have latched onto it and done a great job. I think, conversely, Uber Eats
started here. Special Group did that campaign, and that's now gone worldwide, particularly to America. So it's fantastic to see homegrown ideas going out there.
It's fantastic. Well, a lot going on this week.
In this episode of The Marketing Commute, we welcome Kate Whitney, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer of Marley Spoon. Welcome, Kate. Kate graduated from the University of Canberra with a Bachelor in Communications before beginning her career here in Sydney at M&C Saatchi. Since then, Kate has worked as the Head of Brand and Retail Marketing at Foxtel. She's also been the General Manager of Marketing at David Jones, also the Global Digital Director of Pernod Ricard Winemakers, based here and then in New York. In 2017, Kate moved to New York with Pernod Ricard as the Director of Digital before moving back to Sydney in January of this year to a current role with Marley Spoon. We're so excited to chat more about Kate's journey and welcome to the Marketing Commute podcast.
Thanks, Carmen. It's really good to be here.
Good. So first question we'd love to ask you is, what kick-started your career in marketing?
Oh, great question. I had a law degree coming my way. My dad was a wannabe lawyer as well, and was really, you know, grooming me to go into that side of what he wanted to do. I think I got to about halfway through year 12, and you have that career advice moment. And the career advisor said to me, you know, with law, it's a lot of reading. It's a lot of facts, and it's 8 years. And I thought, oh, Lord, I don't know if I can do that. So I went back home, and I remember saying to Dad, what do you do? You know, and he was head of client service at JWT. You seem to have a pretty awesome life. You jet around the world shooting Lux commercials, and you go to the cricket every weekend. You look like, you know, he was doing all the Benson & Hedges cricket stuff, and, you know, he had this great life. And he said, well, sweetheart, the thing is with law, yes, you won't be able to be very creative, but you will earn a lot more money than advertising. Please don't do advertising. Don't look at me as a role model, you know. And he did everything he could. Anyway, the decision was made in my mind, and I looked up on, I think back then it was your TER, whatever entrance book you had, and I looked at communications degrees, and there was an advertising marketing degree. I applied, I got in, and I turned around on the day the HSC came and said, I'm off to Canberra to do a bachelor degree in advertising. Dad said, there can't even be such a thing, you know, because that's not a craft, it's not a skill, it's not something you could possibly get, qualified for. Anyway, the ground was set, and I pursued the direct marketing sort of track of that at the uni. We had an amazing lecturer called Mary-Kate Hannay, who was obsessed with direct response and direct marketing and loyalty and things like that. And it sort of piqued my interest more than the brand side or the larger marketing piece. I was shocking at economics, which no financial director I've ever worked with would be surprised by. Anyway, and I really liked the idea of direct response and being able to measure and account for communications. And so that's where it started. First job at Lintas, and off I went. Lintas Sprint it was back then.
Yeah, right. And look, and there is normally a moment in your career as you've gone through that journey that your career really starts to accelerate and take off. Where was that for you?
Oh, gosh. I think I would have to say M&C Saatchi, essentially we were M&C Saatchi Direct for many years, and then the tipping point was we pitched and won the Optus business, and we were the first agency to present ourselves. Rather than we have a direct arm and we have a digital arm or a PR arm, we presented us as one team, the 360-degree team who could do anything. And we had a zero-rate card. We had this sort of this model that was unheard of. And we took all the words like direct and digital off our pitch documents, and we said, you're buying M&C Saatchi. And I loved the access that gave me to a whole different playing ground. And that's where I think my career really sort of changed levels.
You've then, in what, 2017, I think, then up stumps and headed to New York.
I ended up actually just pushing into the Absolute brand team and launched, I think, 3 new products with the Absolute brand team, the likes of which I'll never be able to do again. You know, the budgets over there are insane. What they spent on one SKU, we'd probably knock over in about 3 years. that down here. So I think New York was such a tale of jump in with both feet, but really jump in, you know, take everything it is and don't question. You're either in there and you're in, or, you know, don't sort of wish for things that you may or may not have had, because it's a totally different game over there.
Can't be a little bit pregnant.
No. And I think I learned that really quickly. Mm. And then we settled, and I really enjoyed, the time they looked after us. You know, we had the Pernod Ricard business is a wonderful place to be as an employee. And certainly in that digital sphere, you're in the middle of New York. So the MarTech we had access to, you know, had Facebook in the building every week. Facebook wouldn't even come and see see us down here. So, so it was a different playing field, and we were big advertisers, and, you know, we had a lot of fun.
And what about culturally? What's it like? What's the difference between the sort of New Yorkers? I won't say America, because I know America's different culturally across America, New Yorkers and the way they work compared to working here. What's it like?
Do you know what? It's one of the things I miss the most about New Yorkers, and I will say New Yorkers because I think they're a different energy, is their almost aggressive ambition. And, you know, I'll be sitting at the coffee machine in the morning, and a new starter will come in, let's say 29 years old, and she'll be making a coffee next to me. Hi, I'm Cherie, you know. Oh, hi, Cherie. And she'll give you her CV in the next 30 seconds. I'm here because I want to accelerate my career in digital. So maybe we should have a coffee. And I was like, okay, good luck. it's sort of this, I'm going to make connections with people so that I can improve my position here, because I'm here to win. I'm here to grow. I'm here to be promoted. And it's actually quite confronting at first.
Barefaced ambition.
But then, so take it away from the coffee machine and put it in a boardroom. What that becomes is an incredibly productive, high-performance environment teams. Yeah. So people are hustling for the next thing. They put their hand up for every opportunity. They drive an outcome. They remember their goals. The bonus is important. But that sense of speed and that sort urgency, of aggressive pace. Yeah. So I miss that. But you do have this real funny interaction with them where they'll give you feedback about the skirt you're wearing. Then they'll also give you feedback about a team member. Oh, by the way, I had a meeting with such and such. I want to give you 3 points of feedback. Then they'll give you feedback about what you said that day. So there's a lot of constant communication. Now it takes a lot for someone to take all of that on and use it wisely. But I guess I prefer that some days to not knowing.
Yeah, not hearing anything.
Difficult. So culturally, it's a very chatty place to be, and I think I liked that energy. So with the pace comes communication, and it also feels like we get a lot done because there's constant communication, as opposed to should I email you, shouldn't I email you, what should I write, what shouldn't I write. You know, there's none of that going on in New York. You don't die wondering.
Tell us about a few of your mentors, or maybe there's only been one or two, but yeah, what have they brought to the table in that journey?
I think To be fair, my mentor along the whole way would probably have to have been Simon Cora from M&C Saatchi. We started working together so many years ago. And he was essentially my boss for 10 years. But now the relationship, probably since DJ's days, would be one of we get together rather frequently, or, you know, I guess it's a couple of times a year. And we have this great sort of banter of I'll come with a nub of an idea or a nub of a what's next, or it might be career, it might be brand, it might be opportunity. And we have these rather kind of nonsensical conversations where he's this oracle of almost every category of Australian business, particularly in the marketing of it and the consumer strategy and insights behind it. And it would be annoying if you listened to us at a table in the cafe. You know, there's a lot of marketing sort of, you know, tech babble, but there's also a lot of insights and I scribble these notes and he scribbles notes, and we interrupt each other all the time, and we have these great sort of energetic conversations. And I said to a girlfriend recently, I said, he gives me back that energy, but I'm starting to sort of feel like it's all too hard. You know, I don't think we're going to win this thing. It's like, no, Diggo, you just push. You've got this other thing. Don't forget about that. There's this other thing over here. You know, there is a real, I get a lot of energy from him. There's always something that I'm not thinking of that he will bring to it.
Good marketers also recognize the most challenging moments. Are there any that you've had that you'd care to share with us? Something where you've really discovered something either about yourself or about the business or brand you're working for?
Yeah, actually, I've got an example. Probably back in Foxtel days, we had, had a great boss, Ant Warren, for many years. And then, you know, for whatever reason, Ant left the business and we had 5 marketing directors. I was head of brand and retail, but we had 5 marketing directors come in and out of the business like a revolving door for a good 2 years there. It's a rough time. And part of the problem was we couldn't figure out how to get Foxtel's relevance back up there again. You know, it was sort of this super aspirational product. Everyone wanted a Foxtel subscription. Then, you know, anti-siphoning rules and bits and pieces, Freeview starting to loom on the horizon. TiVo was a thing, and Foxtel was losing its brand relevance. And so as a marketer, I kept coming into the boardroom, and indeed the comics, the board, the actual board, and trying to solve the problem with brand marketing. And I was calling it, you know, the two-speed marketing budget, which is keep the brand here, but you can also keep doing your direct response acquisition advertising. Yeah. It's all going to be fine. We just need to invest in the brand. And here's some strategies, and here's agency after agency. Great work coming from the Monkeys and great work coming from, you know, other agencies that pitch for the business. Clems were in there at one point. M&C was in there, of course. And we just couldn't get the exec to see what we could see, that you could revitalize this brand with some good positioning. And it was frustrating, you know, month after month, and we couldn't get anywhere. And you know what? A friend of mine said to me, I think you're not listening to them. You know, they're telling you something and you keep just unpacking the suitcase and putting it into a different suitcase and taking it back in. You're not really listening to them. And do you know what we needed? What we needed then was actually a product development on a marketing development. So what we needed to do was enhance the product. If we'd been really smart, we would have done some pretty decent research back then and realized Binge could have launched in 2012. You know, you think about it now, and we had 2.5 million subscribers back then. Yeah. And now we have 260,000 in Foxtel. So what happened? I mean, we're at the top of the pops then. We had acquisition campaigns, 30,000 subs in a week. Like it was nuts. We were doing so well. But did we miss the tech development piece that a marketer could have brought to the table? And I think we stayed in our swim lanes. And what I would say now is the challenge, had I seen it, would have been get out of your marketing bubble and go and talk to the product team and say, can I help you with some customer insight, back to the point before, and can you develop something that will solve their current problem, which is I want to watch stuff on my phone.
Yeah. And it's funny too, that whole piece around product engineering, and it's a big thing now with that whole, with the technology we have, which you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, however long ago it was, you know, 6-7 years ago, streaming could have been a thing. I mean, I remember doing it, you know, we were streaming live horse racing at Tabcorp back in 2009.
Yeah.
You know, it actually wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
No. But commercially it was like, hang on, no, we want a box in everyone's home.
We want a box in everyone's home. We've got a dish on the roof, the capital cost of the dish, the capital cost of the boxes, that is the model. And I think there's an engineering team at Foxtel back in 2012 who were like, but we've got this thing on an iPad.
Yeah. And Presto was one of the things that came through and never really took off. Which, I always thought the branding of that. I mean, you've got Foxtel is a great brand. Why wouldn't you just create a Foxtel something that was that streaming service?
Well, yes.
And I think, and that was because of the multiple ownership, and there's a whole lot of issues back then. And then I think, I mean, KO proved that they could quickly do it as well.
So, and it was the lesson is listen hard. You know, listen hard, stop and think, what have you got? What are you missing? And if you find yourself unpacking a suitcase and packing it into a different one, you're really not listening. And that repeat was just such a waste of everyone's time. So if I had my time again, you know,
that would be the moment. Yeah.
Just really, and also as a female exec at the time, don't be afraid to keep asking. If the feedback isn't clear, stick your hand up and say, can you be more descriptive in what you're looking for? And I think we were like, we just wanted to get out of the room, so it was like, no problem. So I just wanted to leave and just take the agency back, debrief and go again. And it was just, no, hang on, let's really talk about this. What are you missing? What's annoying you about this? And it's not the fonts and it's not the images and the cost or anything like that. It was actually, we were just on the wrong track.
And speaking of technology, and MarTech has obviously been prevalent through your whole career, sort of digital, and now MarTech is 30% plus of marketing directors' budgets. And, you know, it's challenging because many don't know exactly what they're doing or what they need to do or what they need to know. So when you're looking at a MarTech ecosystem, what are the sort of tips and tricks, or what do you think marketers should be thinking about when they're looking at their ecosystem and when they're leaning into their MarTech spend?
Sure. It is a really common problem. And I have practiced sort of standing up MarTech or tech stacks, if you like, for marketing at probably the last three or four roles I've had. The common problem is everything looks great when it's pitched to you. Everything looks like it will make you coffee in the morning and make you $1 million. You know, there is technology that promises the world. I think my advice to people who are looking and having those conversations with great technology providers is take one step back. Sort of, you can take as many proposals as you like and have a lot of meetings about what products do and don't do, what do they integrate with, who's APIing with what. I would go back to, what's your data strategy? At the end of the day, how will your company, what data does your company have, and what are the possibilities for it? And if you can find an hour or two to sit aside with probably your CTO, in some instances, or just a really group of strong, savvy digital or, you know, data-driven marketers. Talk about what data you currently have on your customers and what do you want to do with it? What would be great? Then build the tech stack based on that. And if you're a great media player and you have a lot of media investment, have the conversation based on customer data as it interplays with media. If you have a lot of transaction data and you want to be able to push that. So with DJs, it was about how do we make the most of our point of sale transaction moment, both online and in store. And the conversation became quickly about the point of sale tech and how could marketing influence the point of sale tech, to the point where we were following at one point the Bloomingdale's model, which was to push out an offer on the receipt. So instead of waiting for you to get your membership rewards statement or your David Jones statement, we wanted the offer to come there and then. So Madam's shopping in the beauty floor, now head up to towels or sheets and grab something up there, which is cross-shopping the store. Now that had nothing to do with media. It had nothing to do with CRM and loyalty. It was basically using the tech that we had and 250,000 transactions a day and work out what we could do with it.
Now, I think a lot of our listeners would be very keen to listen to a bit more about Marley Spoon, because we've chatted about so many great things so far. And I think before we wind up, we definitely did that. And you know, you've been there for 10 months. Yep. It's been a big year. Clearly, you know, we all know the world has changed as we knew it. And I think, you know, you're up almost 100% in sales this year. Just talk through, you know, I suppose your first 10 months of, you know, what you discovered, how you, you know, whatever happened through COVID, how you've gotten to this point in terms of this huge increase in sales.
Sure. So the like to think that my arrival is obviously what propelled.
Excellent.
No, yes. I'm very, very fortunate to be in food delivery this year. Yeah. The environment that we operate in, it's not do or die. I think there's a real strength in what Marley Spoon already has and is very, very good at. So the infrastructure, the supply chain, the distributorship, the thousands and thousands of households we have access to starts you off in a very, very good position. So trying to start a meal kit company this year would have been incredibly challenging for supply alone, let alone distributorship, marketing and everything else, getting brand awareness out there. So joining was probably just the most wonderful thing that happened, was like, oh, wow, I'm in this now. This is awesome. But the second thing was watching what happened to the business. As that pressure came onto the business and as demand increased tenfold, how a business responds to that demand and the choices that the company makes in to meet the demand and to service the country was very inspiring to watch. So we did a couple of things. One was the acquisition dance, which was optimizing almost by the hour on making sure that we didn't overfill the funnel and make sure that we were really optimizing to make sure we could actually service the demand and not disappoint customers. I think we've mobilized very well. The other thing I'd say that we did, which was probably surprising given the maturity that we had and no one having dealt with this before, was the honesty and the frequency with which we communicated to our customers. So when all of this happened, and it just took an email, and the email was, hi everyone, thanks for your patience. We're getting your orders to you as quickly as we possibly can. Here's what's happening in Melbourne. Or hi everyone, here's what's happening in Queensland at the moment. That refreshing honesty with which we took that to customers. I mean, at one point we were doing it every 3 or 4 days. The feedback we got was amazing. They said, thank you so much for telling me. It's not often that a company shares that level of detail. Yeah. And at one point, as you know, we were down in the FC with, you know, masks and shower caps on, packing boxes. You know, everyone from head office went out there to try and pack boxes at one point, both during the Melbourne lockdown and the first Sydney lockdown. So at one point we had the Melbourne FC shut down and we moved all of the production up to Sydney, which is essentially doubling the production overnight.
And we've probably got time for one last question, although we could keep talking for a long time, couldn't we? It's been absolutely fascinating. What does the road ahead look like for you, Kate?
Gosh, that's a really good question. I think I would love to be doing what I'm doing now. Growing the business, hands on the wheel, you know, with a great team of marketers who are passionate about this sort of consumer model where we deliver to a consumer. The growth is profitable. We're promising something that we can deliver to the consumer, and it's in that sustainable, purposeful way. The difference with Marley Spoon is it is genuinely obsessed with that concept of we want people cooking again from scratch, but we also want to help assist what we're doing to the planet, and make sure that we're doing it in a really responsible way. We're at the nub of our sustainability roadmap, and my God, it's exciting. You know, the way that that business looks at things, and the rigor with which we put behind every supplier that comes into the business, how tough we are on them in their food chain, and how tough we are on ourselves. Working for a business like that, it's very inspiring, and it's I feel like it suits me. It feels like every decision becomes easier when you look at it through that lens. Mm. So I'd like to say that we'll be doing more of the same. Who knows? You know, it could be stretching vertically, horizontally, regionally. Mm. I don't think there's a loss of appetite at all in the business. You know, the guys that I work with are endlessly energetic. So makes me feel old today, some days.
Oh, it's been fantastic talking to you. Highly ambitious and highly credentialed. And so thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thanks, guys.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Marketing Commute. Thanks to our guest, Kate Whitney from Marley Spoon. To my co-hosts, Andrew Baxter and Carmen Becker. To our producers, Wing and Frankie McGrath. The studios here at the University of Sydney Business School. And to Visual Domain, our new partner for Season 3. You can find The Marketing Commute on all good podcast networks, and you can read more detailed show notes and get links from each episode to find out more about our guests and the presenters at the website, themarketingcommute.com. We'll see you next time.